Hello and welcome to The Inside Dish on Lehigh Valley Art Salon, where we explore the culinary arts in and around the greater Lehigh Valley. I'm Mike Drabenstadt, your host for our gastronomic tour of our region's amazing food scene. I'm here with Chris Wilson, brewmaster at Weyerbacher Brewery in Easton, and Chris Bowen, brewmaster at Fegley's Brewworks in Bethlehem and also a beer historian. Chris and Chris, welcome to The Inside Dish.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
One of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show is both the breweries that you work for have been in business for more than 20 years, Weyerbacher being founded in 1995 and Fegley's being founded in 1998. And most of the craft beer explosion in this country has really happened maybe in the last 10 years. In fact, when Weyerbacher started, there were only 500 breweries in the country, or 537, and now we're up to 6,000. So what changes have we seen in the craft brewing industry over those, you know, two decades, knowing that neither of you were at the breweries at the time, but maybe aware of what's been going on in this country?
I think we've gone through some ebbs and flows over those, 20 plus years. But the past, you say decade, I could say, 5 years has really been a massive explosion of breweries of all sizes who've small breweries have opened and exploded and been bought, and a lot of brew pubs that are really focusing on their local market. I think, a lot of that's just coming from people becoming more personally educated in what beer can bring to the table. A lot of different flavors, a lot of, an incredible palette of flavors to work with. So, and as long as the people are making good beer, you can incorporate that into your meals and your entertainment planning. Yes.
Now, Chris is a beer historian. You're aware, of course, in this country before Prohibition, there were 5,000 breweries. So, in some ways, we're kind of getting back to where we were.
That's correct. Yeah. I mean, I think around 1880, there was about 4,200 breweries. That name and that number sticks in my mind. And then we saw the consolidation, go on, and regional breweries closing and being bought up. And, we were, as a drinking public, we were sort of whittled down to, German lager of all sorts of flavors and types. Yet it's pretty, single dimension. It's like, the cola industry, there's two, really that make up that sort of segment. And again, the turn back to different flavors, and, it started a lot with the home brewing movement as well, and people making beer at home, and trying these different flavors and these old styles, and nothing's been invented new. It's just a revisit back to those flavors of the past.
Well, let's talk a little bit about flavor. Chris, Weyerbacher certainly brews a lot of different styles, but you've developed a reputation for big beers over the years, full of flavor and often a bit higher in alcohol content. What's your approach for creating a big beer like that? You're looking for density of flavor or layers of flavor or some sort of intrigue or complexity?
I think that's a fair assessment. It's hard to pick one beer to describe, but we're trying to, we're focusing more on the flavor aspects than the alcohol aspect. Sometimes, it just happens when we start building these flavors that, the beer ends up being 12%. That's not generally our goal when we set out to make these beers, but we are looking for a fullness. With a lot of the stout, so Sunday Morning Stout, for example, that's a big chocolatey flavor. So that's where we started. We wanted a stout that was not going to be overly bitter. So we made some malt choices that allowed that. And then it's barrel aged, of course. So you pick up some vanilla and whiskey notes from the barrel, and of course coffee. So throw some coffee in there and bring it all together.
So, Chris Bowen, let's talk a little bit about barrel aging. I know Fegley's does some barrel aging as well. What type of barrels are used with barrel aging, and why might you do it as a brewer?
Sure. Well, a barrel is a little time capsule of additional flavor, I call it. The typical you know, I guess the most commonly used probably be bourbon barrels, or, you know, whiskey barrels in general. They impart, you know, big flavors and boozy sort of nuances and, you know, oak and vanilla that come out of those. You know, those are flavor forward barrels to additionally enhance typically a bigger beer. You don't generally put lighter beers into bourbon barrels. So those are just, you know, flavor enhancing, you know, time capsules, I call them. Then you know, you have another type, which is using a wine barrel, which has some subtleties, but generally more benign and allowing the beer to mature with some more subtle notes. A lot of sour beers go into wine barrels and sometimes get inoculated with additional bugs and things to create all kinds of unique flavors. But yeah, that's, you know, as a brewer and a designer of beer, you're trying to add some time and some additional flavors to add a third dimension to, you know, what you can do in a stainless steel.
Now, do you find, I guess a question for both of you, that after 20 years or 23 years brewing beers, that your companies are looking for something a little bit more adventurous to kind of push the envelope a little bit or just be a little bit more inventive or innovative?
Absolutely. That's definitely a focus of the business at Weyerbacher is continuous innovation, continuous change. It's good for the consumer, of course, but you know, let's not forget it's also good for the brewers. Like we like
you're an artist at heart, right?
Yeah, we like what we do, and one of the things that we like the most is coming up with new new flavor combinations, new beers, just playing around with you know, the tools that we have and come up with new things.
So. Now, for something like a the Sunday morning stout, you also have a Sunday mole stout, which has, if I remember, some chilies or some cinnamon in that too.
It has a some cinnamon and a combination of peppers that are traditionally used in mole. And if you're going to test me on those styles, I can't remember. But let's see, pasilla. Yeah, I'll forget. Yeah.
So is that something where you have a really solid beer to begin with the Sunday morning stout? You're thinking, how can we amplify it? How can we give it a little bit of a tweak to give our customers a little bit of a different profile?
Exactly. Like, I think customers have an expectation of what Sunday morning is supposed to taste like. So they have that expectation. So we build on it. We change it. So there's no barrel aging in Sunday mole. It's so we take that away, but we're adding in a mostly flavor combination of hops, peppers. So it's not very hot from a heat standpoint, and then it still has that rich chocolatey base. So that's where the mole comes from. So it's nice and chocolatey. So
Chris Bowen, do you take a similar approach at Brewworks? I mean, you're a little bit different situation. You're in a downtown urban location with a restaurant attached to it, as opposed to Weyerbacher with a tasting room only. Do you still have the same flexibility in terms of brewing, or do you have other expectations of the customers that are coming in for food also?
Well, we, you know, being a traditional brew pub that's also a restaurant, you know, we're also looking to have probably a wider palette of beers that work well with our foods that we're serving. I know the kitchen is always coming out, emptying our taps to cook with and adding a lot of those flavors back in right into the meals. And, you know, the Fegley's have done a great job with, you know, really keeping things local. Our grains go to, you know, the local, beef provider. And, you know, so you can get that full circle of things. So we also have, you know, a lot of lighter beers, a lot of probably a little bit larger palette of beers, you know, and not quite as big a barrel program as Weyerbacher. But as any brewer sees a barrel, it gets really exciting. So just the thought of a barrel is just, I don't know. Pretty exciting for a brewer.
Well, I know if you go to Weyerbacher or go to Fegley's, generally you're seeing the large stainless steel tanks there. But when you're trying a new recipe or want to experiment a little bit, you're not doing that on in the big tanks. Do you have a smaller system that you would use?
We do now. We have our main brew house is about 40 barrels, or It's 31 gallons per barrel, so you get an idea how big that is. So we have a four-barrel pilot system now. So with new beers, like right now, we're working on our 23rd anniversary, which will come out in the summer. We're going to do some, try out some different flavor combinations before we go on the big brew system. We've only had that running for, say, 2 years. So before that, we just had to do everything on paper and in our minds and rely on our experience and hope for the best. But the pilot does give us an opportunity to try things out and, make some mistakes, because it's you want to make your mistake before you try to put it in the package.
Put a big batch together.
Yeah,
we don't really have a pilot system per se, but our brewer is a little bit smaller, about 15 barrels. So we can, take it down to, 7 barrels, which is, just about the same size as Weyerbacher's pilot. And then we also, rely on, sitting down and just tasting different flavors, in a panel discussion, adding cracked pepper to, some kind of beer or base beer and trying out different flavors. I know I was throwing some Honeyball Tangelos into an IPA the other day, and just trying to, deconstruct recipes. So, you get a sense of what's going to work and what's not going to work, and get a couple people to agree with you, and then take the risk.
Now, Chris, you mentioned Fegley is certainly a 20-year stalwart of the Lehigh Valley, but when it opened in Bethlehem in 1998, that right. was a kind of a pivotal time for the city.
Yeah, it's funny. When I sat down, I wrote a Lehigh Valley beer scene column in the Morning Call. I sat down and spent a few hours with the Fegley family, and I remember them saying that, when the day that the Bethlehem Brew Works opened was April 15th, 1998, and it was the same day that the Hotel Bethlehem had declared bankruptcy. And as they were building the restaurant, they had to drive out of town. I think they went to Applebee's or something on Airport Road because there was no restaurants or anything opened for them to eat. And boy, has things changed over the last 20 years. So
and not just in Bethlehem, but also in Allentown, Easton, and Emmaus, all our suburbs. So Chris and Chris, thank you for joining us here at WDIY.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I'm Mike Drabenstadt, and this is The Inside Dish on Lehigh Valley Art Salon.
In 2018, WDIY is celebrating 23 years on the air. If you listen to WDIY, support the station by becoming a member today. Members are our most reliable source of support. We couldn't be here without you. To become a member, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Hello and welcome to The Inside Dish on Lehigh Valley Art Salon, where we explore the culinary arts in and around the greater Lehigh Valley. I'm Mike Drabenstadt, your host for our gastronomic tour of our region's amazing food scene. I'm here with Bill Steele, owner and operator of Mr. Bill's in the Allentown Fairgrounds Farmers Market. Bill, welcome to The Inside Dish.
Yeah, thanks for having me here, Mike.
I've been going to the Allentown Farmers Market for at least 20 years or more, and I can't remember there not being a Mr. Bill's. How long have you been there, and how'd you get started?
This is our 26th year at the fairgrounds. Actually, I got started there in 1968. I worked in that stand when I was a 13-year-old boy. It's a fun story of how I got to get there, but I worked there through junior high school, and college, and then that stand at the time was where the barbecue chickens were. It was Dan's Poultry Market, and I went off and after college, I went off and went into the outdoor food concession business. I was traveled with carnivals and fairs for 10 years. After the 10 years, I became involved in a restaurant locally here. It was called SL Fingers over on Lehigh Street. And when that closed, I needed another business. And I was walking through the farmer's market and I asked Dan from Dan's Poultry to please sell me that stand. And he said, sure. That was 1992. It's been a real blessing for me.
And has it always been the same size stand, or you've expanded over the years? Yes,
I have. Yeah. The original stand was half this, the size of that. And I had purchased a couple of nearby stands, but I was able to buy the Amish Bakery, which was my next door neighbor. So then I consolidated everything into those two stands, and that's the current configuration.
So I know there are other places around the valley, whether it's like a seafood place or a butcher, that might have a standalone location. Why would you have a location in a farmer's market compared to some of those standalone locations where you might have a little bit more control over who's coming in, over your own parking and things like that?
I've been at the farmer's market for so long, it feels like home. It's treated me so well that we just kept on expanding, and business has gotten better and better and better. Nearly every year of the 26 years we've been there, business has gotten better. I've sort of been too busy to venture out, but that is our next – we're very, very actively engaged to have a standalone location.
Now, so many people are used to shopping in supermarkets, which seem to get bigger every year. I mean, think about when Wegmans opened back in the 1990s, people's minds were blown, and then they expanded it again a couple of years ago, right? How is the market experience different, and how do you approach it as a vendor there to make it different?
The farmer's market is built primarily on customer relations. We become friends with our customers. We laugh with our customers. We cry with our customers. A good example of this is we just lost one of our vendors to a tragedy, a 51-year-old Roger Billick.
Yeah, I knew Roger, yeah.
It was a real tragedy. Went to his funeral, and easily 35, 40% of the attendees to the viewing were customers. Farmers market customers. That's the strength of the farmers market. You shop, you do business with people that you like, and then we also get to have conversations with our customers, and they drive the direction of the changes of our business.
So the idea of having knowledge and this level of interaction and friendliness is just as important as what you have in the display case.
Oh, absolutely, positively. One of my favorite customer experiences is when somebody comes up and they have a recipe in their hand or a cookbook, or they say, I heard of, chicken carbonara. What do you think? What should I use? How would you do it? And we bring in, my son, my daughter, my son-in-law, we're all there. They've spent their whole lives there, and we can have a group effort to help a customer realize the vision that they have for their meal.
And you don't quite get that at a supermarket when you're looking at styrofoam with plastic over.
Well,
right?
Yeah, that's
doesn't talk to you.
That's absolutely true. At a supermarket, they tell you what you're going to buy, and at the farmer's market, the customer tells us what they want, and we make it happen.
It's a really good observation there. Tell us where you get most of your poultry. Mm-hmm. That's in the case.
Sure. We're really blessed to live where we do. We're at the New York City, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia. This is the best of the world comes in this vicinity. We're also blessed that we have Bell and Evans Chicken right down the road in Hershey, Pennsylvania vicinity. We have...
It's right off of 7881, right?
A lot of people have seen their new plant or their water tower. There is no better... I am convinced there is no better poultry operation, commercial poultry operation in the world. They are head and shoulders above any other poultry operation. The owner of the business came to us many years ago and said, Bill, I wish all of my chicken could be sold in places like yours. I want you to buy directly from us. And so we buy directly from them. Cuck's Turkeys up in Tamaqua is the same quality, family-owned business with the absolute best turkey and turkey products and turkey practices. We buy directly from them. I'm running out to the duck farm in Hamburg this afternoon. It's Joe Jurgowitz and Sons Ducks. They are one of the big East Coast duck farmers, and we buy directly from them. So we're really blessed to have these companies right here and to have a personal relationship with them. You know, they ship tractor trailer loads of chicken to Whole Foods and to Wegmans. And when I call up and I say, boy, I have a customer that needs a case of chicken, whatever, they go, okay, yeah, just run down here and pick it up. And we're able to do that. It's fabulous.
So it's a relationship you have with customers at the market, but also a relationship you have with your suppliers that has been fostered over these years too.
It really is. And it makes a difference. We have, I'm thinking of one instance where we were selling Bell and Evans chicken, and then that incident, the interaction with the owner, Scott Seckler of Bell and Evans, said, I want you to buy directly from us. We have a holistic healer that does cooking classes. And this woman came up and she said, Bill, there's something different about the chicken. There's a different energy about the chicken lately. What is that? I said, you know what? It's not passing through another wholesaler that just treats it like another task to do, is to pick up this case of chicken and put it on the truck and throw it off the truck. And no, Bell and Evans loves what they do with chicken, and we love what we do. And she noticed that there was a different energy about the chicken. How wild is that?
Have you found that people have been asking for more local foods over the years?
Oh, absolutely.
Recently, especially?
Yes. They want to know where it came from. When I explain to somebody what air-chilled chicken means, or what expeller-pressed soybeans means, and I feel like E.F. Hutton. There's 5 or 6 or 7 customers leaning in and listening, and they want to know not just where it's coming from, but why we get products from these the best of the best suppliers. They're really interested in every facet of their food.
I know one of the reasons you've expanded over the years is to include more prepared foods.
Yes.
How many different types of chicken and turkey sausage do you have there? Yeah. It's like a smorgasbord.
Yeah, we have over 50 different chicken and turkey sausages and burgers. We're blessed. We get ideas from our customers, from our staff. You go out to eat and you go, oh, what a neat combination. We should make that into a sausage or burger. We also do lots of, we have a fine dining trained chef. For a year and a half, we've been in our new processing facility, which is only 3 blocks from the farmer's market. I really need to have you over there to check it out. It's pretty cool. And we have a fine dining trained chef in there. So we're really upping the game on non-processed food. We make well over 90% of the food that we sell, the processed food, if you will, the cooked food, and that's a big push for us, is non-processed food, and that's what people want also, is non-processed food.
And how has the percentage shifted from whole and parts of turkeys and chickens to these more prepared foods over your time at the market?
Mm-hmm. 1992, I had a 36-foot stand that had a 4-foot case that had prepared foods. So we had 32 feet of raw chicken and turkey. Now we have 24, 28 feet of raw chicken or turkey. And the balanced, so if it's, call it 30 feet, we have 42 feet of sausages and prepared foods. And it's
definitely more than 50-50 now.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I know when I go to the market, I look in the case, you see rabbit, you see chicken backs and necks, you see chicken hearts. These are things you don't generally see in a supermarket. So people can get those things and people are actually buying them.
Yes. We offer things that you wouldn't normally see in the supermarket. There's things that we offer, even though it doesn't make a lot of sense to take up the space in the case for us from a financial point of view, but people come there just for these sort of unusual things. And did you notice the chicken feet that we have in there? Bone broth has become a big deal. So we, you know, We can sell the ingredients for that. With our processing facility, we make a lot of bone broth every week. And in fact, what we do then, because there is such a push for the healthiness of bone broth and the gut health and those kind of things, we use bone broth to make our non-traditional prepared foods. So we make a white bean and kale chicken breast soup using bone broth instead of regular broth. We use it in our chicken pot pie. We use bone broth. So, and it's great because we get to have conversations with our customers telling them, hey, you heard about bone broth. You're interested in it. Here, you could ingest it without just eating your regular foods that you would normally eat.
So it comes down to really looking at everything you have and how you can help deliver that to the customer in terms of a total food experience?
It is. There's a lot of education that goes on. Some education, the customers teach us some things. There's a lot of feedback from the customers. But there's a lot of education from that goes the other way across the counter, too. It's great. My business was really blessed. In 1992, the Allentown Hospital is right across the street. That went from the main hospital to a secondary hospital. But in 1992, most people that had a heart attack went to the hospital. And when they came out, it was a surprise. And they came out and the doctor told them, you're going to change the way you eat. You're going to eat more chicken and turkey. And they'd say, well, how am I going to do that? And how lucky were we? A lot of those doctors and nurses said, go across the street and go to Mr. Bill's. He has chicken more ways than any other place that I know. And that's really helped us out. And we still do that. We don't get those references from the doctors, eat at Mr. Bill's or die any longer, but for no special reason except that the dynamics of the whole hospital network has changed.
But, good information and a good product. So, yes. Bill, thanks for joining us here at WDIY and sharing your story.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm Mike Dravenstadt, and this is The Inside Dish on Lehigh Valley Art Salon.